vybral týždňu z miesta. A warm welcome to the second day of the National Seminar on Scripts and Languages of Modern India with the special references to Konkani, being held at Kallangan Mangalore on March 10 and 11, 2012 under the auspices of Global Konkani Organization, Jagatik Konkani Sangathan. We had the inaugural yesterday and reports have been carried in almost all the newspapers of the region, including English and Kannada. Yesterday, apart from the inaugural and the keynote, we had the first paper by Dr. Anvita Abhi on script and languages, relationships and contentions. Today, we have four papers. First, which begins the day, is by Alok Rai on Language, Script and Dominance India, followed by paper by Asha Sarangi on Language and Territory, Issues of Rights and Identities. Noon, we have a paper by Madhavi Sardesai on the case for single script for Konkani. And the last book of the day is scheduled after lunch by Pratap Naik on the case for multi-scripts for Konkani. The day's deliberations will be chaired by the chairperson of the seminar, Professor Valerian Rodriguez, who will also begin the day by summarizing the issues raised yesterday and also charting the today's sessions. May I invite the chairperson of the You would like to say something in between? Okay. Before I invite him, with his permission, I invite Eric Osirio to make a few points.
Yeah, with the permission of the chairperson, I would like to make some announcements, please. I request your attention, kind attention. One, those who have not registered their names, please do so. We need a record of all those who have attended. So please register your names if you have not registered your names yet. Second thing is, some are uncomfortable with the AC. So if you do not want the AC, we will open the windows and put on the fans, switch on the fans. Will that be better? Okay, please. Put a journal of Kevara, Fana Ankara, and AC of Kara. And then the other thing is, every one of us cannot live without the mobile these days, including me, but I humbly request you to put the mobiles off during the sessions here, otherwise there is a lot of distraction. I hope you will understand why I am saying this, and I know you will understand why I am saying it, even though you may not like it. Nimane. For good reasons, the entire proceedings are in English, but all of us are Konkani. So apart from Konkani, it would be good if I don't hear any other language, because I hear a lot of Malayalam around. I think we are all Konkanis, maybe from Kerala or from Goa or from anywhere else, but it should be Konkani that we speak, not Malayalam. Otherwise, how can we call ourselves Konkanis? So this is a humble request. I hope you keep this in mind, not only here, but in your place also. Thank you, Dr. Alok. He is here, I think. Has he come? Yeah, Dr. Alok has come. So before that, our chairman will speak a few words.
Thank you. Just wanted to say a few words before we start. I think all seminars, at least the seminars I attend, are systematic explorations of issues. And I'm sure that we are here to systematically explore a major problem that is before us. It's a public problem. We had, at least according to me, a fairly intense discussion yesterday, controversial at points, but some of these controversies are going to be attended to today. I have made a summary after going back of yesterday's proceedings, and it might be good, I thought it, I would do it for my record, but it might be useful also for just to remind you that these are some of the issues that came up. I did it on the basis of my memory, and therefore there would be some emphasis. I'm just going to read out to you this particular summary statement. So that at least we don't repeat issues which I think to some extent we have come to an agreement, unless we want to reopen the agreement itself and begin to focus much more strongly on issues which I think we need to explore today, so that there is a certain progression on this particular theme that we would register over time. This is just a two-page note. It would take me about 5 minutes. You need to bear with me. There are 8 points that I want to make. National Seminar on Scripts and Languages of Modern India, summary statement of the proceedings of March 10, 2012. Number one, the problem that has given rise to this conference is the controversy between script on one hand and knowledge production, literary sensitivity, and communication and social bonding on the other. In this context, the question that is posed before the seminar is, what script is the best and befitting for the Konkani language? This, I think, is the big question that confronts us. Second point I wish to raise. This point has been raised repeatedly by several speakers. The sociological context to this question is the multiplicity of scripts in Konkani, Nagari, Roman, Kannada, Malayalam, Arabic Persian, and even Gujarati, a situation which in many ways is unique in India. At the same time, there are distinct ethnic groups which speak Konkani. Siddhis, Karvis, Kumbis, Navayas, Saraswats, Gaur Saraswats, Catholics of Goa and coastal Karnataka, and others, groups that are spread across the religious divide in the region. Several of these groups are also diasporic, for whom script becomes an important marker for ethnic bonding. Nagari script is employed by an overwhelming number of language communities in India today, and increasingly by small ethnic groups in Chota Nagpur, Chhattisgarh, and Northeast India. This is a point which came up, and Professor Anvita Abhi pointed out to this particular fact. Historically, Nagari script has also been embraced by Sanskrit and Hindi and evokes a certain bond among sections across the Konkani-speaking world. Marathi, which once claimed Konkani as integral to it, is also written in Nagari script. Certain social strata, such as the Saraswats and Gaur Saraswats, and those strongly bonded to Marathi, seem to favor Nagari as the exclusive script for Konkani. The issue is further complicated due to Konkani being part of the Indo-European family of languages and the stronger, though not exclusive, association of Nagari with this family of languages in India. Many Konkani communities today are part of the encompassing bond of the Dravidian family of languages, such as Kannada, Tulu, and Malayalam. These factors have created an apprehension among speakers and writers in Konkani, other than those belonging to the former clusters, that is the Indo-European languages, that advocacy of Nagari script suggests specific forms of dominance and a hollow, homogenized conception of Indian nationhood, which is not acceptable to many diversified groups today in India. The issue is complicated due to a specific developmental dynamics in the region, where new social and economic networks are being fused at the regional, national, and international levels. Should you find your natural bond with the region, nation, or a cosmopolitan world is a question that confronts many speakers of Konkani today. The emphasis on the regional script with Nagari or Roman has something to do with the slide of the response to this question. Certain policy initiatives have not helped in negotiating across the controversy. The Central Sahitya Academy has favored Konkani Nagari script and thereby excluded Konkani literary productions in other scripts. In Goa, when Konkani came to be embraced as the state language, an overt tilt towards Nagari was made, partly to placate the strong Marathi lobby. This is the second point, a kind of a descriptive account of the issues that came up yesterday. The third point, the conference was near unanimous with regard to the following issues. One, there is no natural bond between a script and a language. It is a historical development. Two, communities are embedded in language and script. Any attempt to transpose a community to another script and language may make it illiterate and void of a cultural bonding, a point which very strongly was made by Professor Anvita B yesterday. A multilingual and multi-script grooming and education is better than monolingual and monoscript grooming. Four, the anchoring of Konkani in a multi-script domain can be an asset rather than a liability. The fourth point that came up. The conference also felt that there is little justification for awards and recognitions in Konkani confined to the Nagari script by central public institutions. Such a policy is exclusionary and contravenes the principle of equality of citizenship and recognition of diversity in this country. Fifth issue, language and script considerations cannot ignore social and economic dynamics and opportunities that people seek. Information technology today has increasingly employed the Roman script for social networking. The usage of other scripts is growing, but far behind. The sixth point, slightly larger. While there is an going against this larger cosmopolitanism that is coming up, while there is no natural affinity between a language and a script, all Indian scripts have their moorings in the Brahmi script. The Brahmi script has a distinctive trajectory of development, very different from other scripts in the world. It has enabled the expression of the linguistic and sound complexity in Indian languages. It is difficult to transliterate Indian languages to a family of scripts other than Brahmi, and when it is done, one has to take recourse to a complex set of diacritical marks. On the other hand, it is easier for Indians to learn from other Indian scripts and translating from one Indian script to another Indian script. The larger issue of cultural embeddedness cannot therefore ignore the issue of the appropriate script. While such an understanding does not privilege Nagari script, it does not endorse an attitude that any script goes. Seventh, given the multi-script character of Konkani, one of the desirable projects is a multi-script Konkani lexicon stroke dictionary. It could be one of the most helpful devices to forge bonding across the multi-scriptal Konkani world. And the last issue that I feel came up yesterday. Issues of language and script are deeply caught in political contentions. That is, contentions of and for power and dominance. While one has to acknowledge them, all considerations need not be collapsed into political machinations. There are reasonable concerns which have the possibility of being negotiated across a democratic space better than mere sectional interests. There are also issues concerning script which need to be better understood in a scientific sense, and such an understanding has to be invoked against empty political rhetoric. Now, this is the summary that of yesterday's proceedings that I did. I just went back and typed it out. And we would now take on from here, from yesterday. I wanted to recall this yesterday's proceedings so that we can plug on to newer issues and concerns which have been omitted yesterday. May I now request Professor Alok Rai to come and make his presentation. Professor Alok Rai has been introduced yesterday, but maybe one thing I want to tell you about. Professor Alok Rai has been one of the most inspiring intellectuals in India. Sober, withdrawn, you know, but extremely energetic. He comes from a particular tradition. I hope he doesn't mind me telling this. He is the grandson of the great Premchand. His father is the great Hindi literature Amrit Rai. And therefore, literature and the larger domains are part of his personality. And he has been quite central in terms of some of the great debates that have occurred in India. And one of his greatest work is the controversy between Urdu and Hindi, a controversy which eventually led to the marginalization of Urdu and, together with Urdu, probably the entire Muslim community in India, which was marked with Urdu. And once that language and its script came to be marginalized, the entire community eventually came to be relatively marginalized. He has done this great work, and I'm sure that you would, in the background of this, you would raise issues even beyond his presentation. Sorry for dragging these personal details about his genealogy, but I thought that it might be something which would make you to take Professor Alok Rai a little more seriously than probably his presentation would invoke. Thank you.
Thank you. Valerian, dear friends, I thank you for that very warm introduction. One thing I should tell you right at the outset, I'm far from withdrawn. I am never withdrawn, even when I try to be. But I will try and not be overly passionate, even though language obviously is an issue over which it is almost impossible to speak dispassionately. And since he has mentioned my family tradition, let me say that it is, in fact, this involvement with language and script, in particular with Indian Urdu, is something that has come to me as a kind of inheritance. It was the thing which my grandfather was attending to obsessively in his last years. It is what my father was working on. His big work is in fact on that. And when he died somewhat suddenly, what I inherited was a working table with unfinished manuscripts in three scripts. All right? So that the problem that arose is simply who can finish the work. Because to find people who have that range of linguistic and scriptural competence has in fact itself become quite rare. So, I come with that kind of background to this. However, before, and one, let me please, I must really thank the organizers of this conference and Valerian for allowing me to visit this very beautiful part of the country, even though I know nothing about the Konkani struggle. As far as Konkani and the struggle for Konkani is concerned, I am learning. It would be absurd of me to presume to tell you about what ought to be done, what could be done, what should be done, what it is. I do not know. I am here in order to learn. I am listening. What I can do is to speak in terms of what I do know and approach the problem from where I am located, which is the kind of Hindi-Urdu controversy and the way in which that controversy offers analogical possibilities. It's possible to draw analogies from what happens there in order perhaps to get some insight into problems that appear similar. Now, in talking in terms of analogies, I realize that I am susceptible to the kind of delusion that scholars and patients are prone to, which is that suddenly when one gets a particular ailment, the whole world seems to be to suffer from the same ailment. When I discovered gout, when I had gout, I discovered the rest of the world had gout. When I got a backache, I discovered everyone else has backache. Scholars similarly think that the whole world basically is involved in certain versions of their own problem. Now, I realize that I am prone to that. Therefore, even where I do draw analogies with what I do know, I would be perfectly open to being told that in fact this analogy does not work. That is to say, there is a certain extent to which this situation here, this particular context is different. It is unique and therefore the attempt to draw an analogy fails. I would suggest, however, that both the finding of an analogy and the failure to find an analogy are both intellectually valuable, because to fail to find an analogy is to actually identify something that is unique. So I would suggest to you that the exercise of coming at your problem by a kind of indirect route is not entirely a wasteful exercise, I propose. However, so let me come back to what I know, which is the emergence of Hindi and Urdu as independent languages in the late 19th, early 20th century. This process, I need hardly say, has been deeply, profoundly consequential. The consequences, what starts out as a relatively small and local struggle has had effects that have gone way beyond the intentions and even the imagination of the earliest agents in this controversy. Indeed, it might be possible to say that the effects of that small struggle are what we are still in some sense inhabiting. We are still living through the consequences of things that spun out from that. Okay. Now, let me try and start pulling some analogies. As anybody who knows about this controversy at all knows, the beginnings of the Hindi-Urdu controversy start in a demand for script recognition. As you know, the earliest body, the earliest institutional body to make a demand for Hindi is in fact the Nagari Pracharini Sabha. The Nagari Pracharini Sabha, the Society for the Promotion of Nagari. So that the demand started as a demand for not the exclusive, but the supplementary acceptance of Nagari as, and once again, not in some large institutional context, merely as a script in which people may be allowed to make petitions to the government, as the court language, that the script be allowed as the court language. Okay? This was, I'm sorry, if those of you who are familiar with it will forgive me for it, but since some of you may be unfamiliar, let me explain. This demand for very modest acceptance had to do with jobs, very simply. Am I too close? No, this had to do with jobs. Because, in fact, what had emerged, there was a kind of class that had emerged in the post-mutiny, post-1857 dispensation, which wanted employment, and because the Nagaris, they had been educated in Nagari, but Nagari was not accepted in the administration for doing anything. So the demand was a very modest one. Please allow us also to come and work in these offices. Okay. As always happens, the entrenched class, which was working through the Urdu script, said, no way. Who are you? Go away. We don't need you. We are doing fine. Thank you very much. As happens with these struggles, the people who were defeated once came back with escalated demands, defeated again, went back, came back with escalated demands, so that the late 19th century, the latter half of the 19th century, is full of one representation, defeat, another representation, defeat, a third representation, defeat, until the final victory in 1900 with the McDonald Order, right? It is at each stage they are defeated and the struggle goes to a wider level. It becomes a broader struggle. So that what starts out as a script demands becomes a language demand. What becomes a language demand becomes a political demand. What is a political demand ends up, as you know, ultimately with a demand for a separate state, a separate nation. Okay, so that is the kind of process we are talking about. Now, looking at this progression, I was talking to a German friend of mine, actually, from Heidelberg, 3-4 days back. He asked me, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to Mangalore, I'm going to this conference, and you know, this is what I want to say there. And he expressed, as a lot of people who are unhappy with the cultural consequences of the split, express a certain longing. I wish this had not happened. I wish the composite cultural inheritance, which was available to everyone and which is now available in fractured forms, had remained available. He said, you know, I dream, he said, that there might have been some talented designer, some brilliant person who could have invented a script compromise. That somehow, if this Nagari versus Persian script, some scriptural solution had been found, maybe the problem would have gone away. Maybe this entire and melancholy sequence need not have happened. The question I want to put to you is, do you think so? No. No, that, you know, that any imaginable solution would not be a solution. It would merely be a restatement of the problem. The problem would continue. Therefore, in some sense, I propose to you, script is not the issue. All right. Thinking of, as it were, possible compromises, yesterday when we were talking here, I said, you know, one possible solution then, you know, if indeed it is the recognition of one script and not the other, is for the Sahitya Akademi to offer 5 prizes for Konkani. Instead of getting one shawl, which is what they give to the prize winner, let them get 5. Let them give you one for Konkani in the Malayalam script, one for Konkani in this script, one in the Roman script. What's the problem? All right. So that now, would we have a kind of then Would we recover a kind of lost cultural unity, or discover a kind of happy heterogeneity, or merely find new locations where the struggle can be resumed? All right? In which case, of course, then the intellectual task is to actually examine what is the nature of the struggle. Okay, let me give you another and a kind of counter example. You see, the Nagri-Urdu controversy, the Nagri-Urdu struggle got resolved in favor of Nagri, as it happens. So that the Urdu Walas, who at the beginning of the century were entrenched in power, in 50 years discover that they don't have power anymore. Power is in the hands of the Nagri Walas. And, you know, even though there are Urdu academies and stuff like that with published books, their books don't get read. So again, as a kind of pacific solution, it was proposed, so why don't you start publishing the Urdu texts in the Nagri script? Okay? Make it available to everyone. Solution, problem, everybody's happy. Nope. Everybody is not happy. Because the moment you publish the Urdu archive in the Nagari text, the Urdu Walas say, we will disappear. We exist by virtue of the fact that this archive is only available in our script. Therefore, I propose to you that these failed attempts at compromise tell us something. All right? And it's important to understand what it is that they tell us. All right? Again, one more scriptural short footnote. The attempt was made to make Hindi, the Nagari script, more capable of handling the sounds of the Persian Arabic register. All right? So you get the nuktas, you know, ka, 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 and so on. Okay? Did it work? On the contrary, a very early and well-known essay by a Hindi wala is, Hindi mein bindi kyun? But should we do this? Alright? So that, you know, far from accepting the compromise and becoming friends and kissing and making up, they say, no way. We don't want this. Okay. Now, therefore the question, to me the intellectual question that arises is, what is it that marches behind or underlies the claim of a non-negotiable difference? All right? Because there must be something. If in fact attempts to resolve difference run into this kind of resistance, what is it that marches behind it? What is it that underlies it? What is it that drives this? Okay? Again, if I come back to the area that I know, which is to say Hindi Urdu, what marches behind this in the late 19th, early 20th century is the emergence of a newly educated and newly economically powerful class in the post-mutiny dispensation, which finds itself excluded from the origins of, from the corridors of power, from the locations of power, and says, we want in. We want a share of, our share of power. It's as simple as that. And this emergent rising class uses script, uses language, uses all kinds of things in order to stake its legitimate claim to power. Please understand that I am not saying that making a claim for power is illegitimate. I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is what one needs to recognize is the claim for power. Which is why, even though there may be forms of compromise available, those compromises don't work. They cannot work. Because there is something else that is at stake. Which is to say that in the case of Hindi Urdu, please understand, I'm talking about Hindi Urdu. I cannot presume to talk about Konkani. Hindi Urdu, I understand. Okay? That the script issue, the language issue, all right, is, and I'm saying something slightly complex, both the symptom of other issues. You see, the question I ask myself is, when does an issue become an issue? You know, what I'm wearing may or may not be an issue. If you say we have a very strict dress code, then this becomes an issue. I.e., the context determines what becomes an issue. Okay, so the question to ask is, when does an issue become an issue? Okay, and I'm saying that these, again, even when it becomes an issue, these issues are at the one level symptoms of other struggles. They are also, and just as importantly, weapons in other struggles. They are both symptoms and weapons in struggle. They are, through them also the struggle is carried out, and through them the struggle expresses itself. So both those things are the case. And I would suggest, against Marx, philosophers have struggled to understand the world, the point, however, is to change it. I would say that our duty, my duty as an intellectual, is first to understand what the situation is. So at least my attempt here is to try and understand what is the nature of this struggle. Now, as I said, I don't have to point out these analogies. These analogies are there, and I look forward to the discussion of how these analogies work and where these analogies fail. I would, however, like to make 5 minutes, then? Yeah? Okay, good, okay. I would like to make a few points more. I realize very clearly that there are problems, some very obvious and indeed slightly farcical problems, with trying to draw analogies from the Hindi-Urdu Nagari situation here. The most obvious one for me is that in the historical context that I know best, Nagari was in fact what was used as the weapon for making a claim of difference. In the late 19th, early 20th century in North India, in Awadh, in NWP, Nagari was what was used in order to make the claim of difference. We are not like you, and we want our place in the sun. And I realize that here, or at least I think I realize it here in this rather different context, Nagari is what is used in order to resist the claim of difference. All right. So, in a very obvious way, the analogy from there works at a formal level and fails at the level of detail. That Nagari is what is used. Nagari is what is now hegemonic. Nagari here is in the situation, possibly, that Urdu was in NWP then. All right. Okay. So, I heard this at some point. I heard this also about, you know, about how if we have one script or there's a longing for one script or a longing for one language, one nation, one language. I think Eric, you also said the same thing. I was reminded actually of a prophetic anecdote which a Sri Lankan intellectual academic told me once. He said, and this is, he's going back to 60s, all right, when the struggle had just started, and he said that if there is a demand for one language, there will be two states. If the demand for two languages is accepted, there can be one state. I.e., an excessive demand for unity will actually produce, by itself, it will produce energies which will fracture it. So, two languages, one state, one language, two states, was the formula that he gave me, and it is something that has stayed with me. You know, as you know, something that is, it is important to understand that the lust for unity can itself produce this unity. Just as the lust, forgive me, for making Hindi the national language is what has produced the anti-Hindi agitation in Tamil Nadu. It's very simple. You know, Too much unity will produce a demand for disunity. Forget it. So, okay. The next point I wish to make is perhaps more controversial. But let me make it anyway. I just wonder, and have wondered in the context of language, whether, and I would like you not to say, not to reject the idea immediately, but please stay with the idea for half a minute. Should there be a policy at all? Is language something that lends itself to policy? The reason I say this is that the moment there is a policy, there has to be a kind of stated official position, official preference. Something has to be done. Might it, I'm not suggesting it is, but might it be better not to have a policy at all? Or indeed, if this idea is too radical, that there should be no policy, just let it happen. You know, let whatever emerges, emerge, because language is in some sense a kind of natural growth. So some things rise, some things fall, etc. If that idea is rejected as being excessively radical, then what should be the goal of policy? Should policy be designed with a view to some ideal, distant aim that our policy is designed in order to get there? However that distant aim is defined, whether in terms of unity or diversity, homogeneity or heterogeneity, however that aim is defined, should policy aim towards a distant goal, or should alternatively policy be guided by the desire for producing a context for proximate negotiations? That basically, instead of being long term, should policy be medium term? All right. Again, I propose this only as an idea, since it's, you know, since we are thinking about these things, I thought, you know, this is something that I should propose. Finally, this is something that I like to think about, but you know, whether or not this is the right context, think about it, you will determine, I don't know. But the question that I ask myself is, and the first form of the question is an easy one: what dies when a language dies? What dies when a language dies? Okay? And you know, the answers are fairly, you know, in some sense obvious: Sapir-Whorf, worldviews, values, perceptions, you know, there are whole ranges of answers, fairly easy answers, which one can give to, at least try to give to the question of what dies when a language dies. The more troublesome question, the much more difficult question to me is, what dies when a script dies? What dies when a script dies? Suppose we were talking, Valerian and I were talking last night, suppose we agreed by a kind of universal agreement that all of us would represent all our languages in international phonetic alphabet. If all of us agreed that we would write everything henceforth in IPA. Okay, so I can read what you're saying, you can read what I'm saying, no problem. Would it solve it, or would we lose something? If we would in fact lose something, as I do believe we would lose, I think it would be nice if we could think about what it is that would be lost when a script dies. And again, I would like to distinguish between the question, what dies when a script dies? Because this question is not the same as the question of what dies when a script is killed. That's a different question. It's not, you know, the death is incidental. What dies when a script is killed? You know, and again there are historical examples of certain scripts being suppressed. This script must not be visible and so on. Okay, so it is worth asking. Finally, have I said finally twice? Okay. Finally. Okay. This is something I like to think about the politics of difference. You know, the politics of asserting difference, claiming difference, and all right? Now, as we know, the politics of difference, like all politics, happens within the context of power, and the context of power is not some stable thing out there. The context of power is always has to do with unequal distributions of power, and much more important from the point of view of the politics of difference, the dynamically changing distributions of power. That where one gets stable hierarchies of power, there is no politics of difference. One gets the politics of difference only when there are unstable hierarchies of power, because it is only then that claims of difference can be raised politically. It is only then that claims of difference can be politicized, given political weight. Okay. In this context, and merely again as a as an intellectual footnote, really, I suppose, that in thinking again about the politics of difference, one needs to think about two kinds of difference. One are claims of difference, meaning I am not the same as you, or ascriptions of difference, you are not the same as me. Either claims of difference or ascriptions of difference. And depending on whether one is dealing with claims of difference or ascriptions of difference, one will get one kind of politics or another kind of politics. Ascriptions of difference typically underlie racist politics, the politics of apartheid, the politics of gender, the politics of caste. All right? So there is the politics of the ascription of difference, politics of the claims of difference. And again, within this context, the other possibility, along with politicizing the politicizing of difference, is the final possibility that my friend Anvita knows very well about, which is the anthropologizing of difference. That is, where difference cannot be actually converted into politics, where difference is safe, it is not dangerous, it is far away, it is not associated with challenges to power, in which case I will allow you to be different. Indeed, I will insist that you remain different. So, along with the politicizing of difference, one would also get the anthropologizing of difference, as one gets with, museumized populations of various kinds. I thank you very much for your attention. I think I'm done. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Chennai. Mildred is from Goa. His mission to our contacts, it would be to pose the question when we were first to try and answer what ties from the script to ties. This is not a question we bring on many of our minds. We have the scripts here. And we also want to know, probably we are ourselves have not thought in depth of what will happen if anything happens. So I would expect you to give us some light where we have not been. What would we use? In fact, if our script is killed tomorrow.
Since the question is warming up, I'll add one question. Can the present context of Konkani, where within Goa, for example, there is a hegemony of Nagari over Romi script, let's not worry about other, is this the next phase of dialectic, that there was once a dominance of Romi over Devanagari, and therefore now a dominance of Nagari over Romi? It came across to me when you said that because Urdu dominated or rejected any claim from Nagari, Nagari later, for various historical economic reasons, became powerful, and now it's the turn of the Urdu to make a claim as against Nagari.
This is only a comment. When I heard you, I visualize you are only replacing the words like Urdu as far as Romi script is concerned and Nagari for Devanagari in the situation of Goa. It was all over the dominance of Romi, and subsequently, after the liberation, as you said, we are different. That's the reason why the Nagari movement became more forceful. And finally, the act that we had. Now, what happened in the case of Urdu and Hindi? Today, Hindi is dominating the scene. Similarly, in Goa, Devanagari is dominating the scene officially, although unofficially, Romi has got a lot of support. Now, therefore, there is extra efforts on the part of Devanagari lobby to see that the script is eliminated. And it is only for the last 3 or 4 years that the Roman script supporters fought with a distinctive force and enthusiasm, and the government was forced to support the development of Konkani in the Roman state. So, therefore, today the situation is both are fighting against each other. One for the survival, the other for the dominance. And in which case, I don't know finally what will be the end. Whether it is the same end, what happened to Hindi and Urdu, what happened to Urdu in case of Urdu-Hindi conflict. Therefore, I will be very anxious to know the answers from you, what will happen if a script dies.
Question of what dies when a script dies is one that has come up, incidentally it came up in the context of Hindi as well, because one of the solutions to the Hindi Urdu controversy that was suggested was that Hindi and Urdu should both be written in the Roman script. The solution that was proposed was both of them should be written in the Roman script in the way that the army does even today. So the army uses Hindustani and the Roman. Does it matter to the Jawan, to the soldier? Probably not, because what it means, what language is being used for the Jawan is relatively simple, you know, left, right, which has any depth or with any sensitivity, the script is what carries the code of the language. Because the etymological code, the roots, the connections, the way in which words sit next to each other, the way in which words belong to families and extended families, kinships, lineages. So that what lives in and through the script is vital to the inner being and the deep life of a script. Therefore, I do believe that script is a very important question. And if in fact we had all started writing Hindi Urdu in the Roman script, something would have been lost. However, I don't know to what extent this analogy maps on to Konkani in Roman script. I frankly don't know. I would like to hear from you. What do you think is special or lives very specially? What is distinctive in Konkani when it is written in Roman script? What is it that is unavailable when you write the same thing in a different script? What disappears? I don't know this. I would like to know. What is it that becomes available in one script? That's it. Then, incidentally, I am not inclined to take a kind of storytelling determinist sort of view, first one, then the other, first coming. First one is A dominant and B replaced, B A replaced by B. I think, of course it is the case, but there is no therefore about it. And in each historical context, arguments are given, reasons are given, reasons are challenged. So I don't see that there's any reason to say things that, first they were less powerful, now they become more powerful, tomorrow something else will happen. Because obviously if one were to take that kind of view of history, then one is deprived of agency altogether. We act for what appeared to us as reasons for acting. All I'm saying is that by cutting through the surface of the narrative, one gets to what is really an issue. What is it that is driving the movement? Because it's an important question, because it is that which is sustainable. And as I said to you, what if the science classroom were to be 5 prizes? Would we all go home? You would not go home. Something else is driving you. And we need to focus a little on what is it that drives it. What are, in case Hindi Urdu, there were material factors, quite simply. There was a class of educated and unemployed young men, in that case men, women, not yet. And they wanted jobs. And the only way they could get jobs is by mattering in the enterprise. Simple. So the agitation very quickly acquired kind of democratic populist rhetoric, very easily. They were able to organize nationwide, get signature campaigns, make it a broader and broader struggle. It's a long, very sad story actually, but I don't want to go there. So, I'll stop.
What is lost when a script is lost? To this question, we must find the answer, honestly. We can't expect someone else to tell us the answer. We have to find an answer. And this is a process through which we are trying to find an answer. But there are certain things here. These are not two languages that we're talking about. We're talking about one language and multi scripts. And we are also regionally defined. The scripts are regionally defined, except Roman happens to be in Goa and they live in Devanagari, direct confrontation. But we in Karnataka, Kannada script, Kerala, Malayalam script, and then Bhadkal, Nawayati, post-Arabic script, regionally also. So our script also represents the Boli, the dialect that we speak in. For one thing, I would say in Konkani, if a script is lost, a dialect is lost. Not one dialect. Plenty of dialects will be lost. And one dialect will dominate in the pretext of script. And this is exactly the politics of script that is playing out in Konkani today. A section of our people are through the pretext of script trying to impose their dialect, Boli, on the others. And this is actually the case, and that is what it increases more than the script. So a lot of dialects, Boli will be lost. A lot of variety will be lost in Konkani. And this is just a reflection on the we can go into the subject deeper at a later stage, but this much for sure. I'm very thankful to you, sir, for providing us this angle, this perspective of Urdu and Hindi, and we see a lot of similarities. Devanagari now, Devanagari, which has now become Devanagari for scientific reasons, Devanagari. This fight between Urdu and Hindi also is, we have a lot to learn. We have a lot to learn from this fight. Of course, transfer of power from A to A to A to B will not happen because it's a very complex situation, so we do not know what is going to happen next. But this much we can say, Devanagari is on the defensive at the moment. Which was on the offensive all the time, is for the first time on the defensive.
One of the first books, December, many books that actually addressed the area that my work is also related to now, was by scholar Christopher King, and his book was called One Language, Two Scripts. Okay, his book was called One Language, Two Scripts, and you can see that this is all very simply, you know, was one language a script. The reason why it's relevant what you're talking about is that in the run of time, two scripts have produced now two recognizable linguistic cultures, certainly two recognizably different literary cultures. You know? So that not only basically the causation does lie from script to language also. I'm only confirming what you're saying, you know? That through the preservation of other kinds of variety get the space to emerge. Right? I'm making it for you.
Kerala, when the script is killed, literature is killed, because Devanagari was enclosed there, and in the context of Malayalam script, and there is nobody now writing literature in Konkani.
I also realize about this. It's a complex deep matter, but it's a complex deep matter that we should think about, you know. And also, I made the difference. There is a difference between what happens when a script dies, what happens when a script is killed. And when a script is killed, we already talked about differentiation of power and unequal power. However, I wish to insist that a script is important. Also, if one wants to actually be sensitive to language, and that is why I gave the example of IPA, or indeed English language spelling reform. Alright? English language spelling reform has been around for a century. Alright? And it has been resisted by all people who love the language, because if knife becomes NYF and knife becomes NYT, you have lost something. You have lost the information that the initial A in knife gives you. You've lost the information that NIGH gives you, the IGH gives you for I. That is information. If now that information makes it slightly more difficult for primary learners, I understand. But to say that that is not information is absurd, because it is through those clues that we understand what is coming from where, what is connected and what. And I would be reluctant to lose that information. So, lastly, with codification and so on, right? I've been a teacher for over 40 years. I'm aware of the tension between allowing heterogeneity and difference and the need to be normative, all right? As a teacher of English, what do? I correct them, or I say merely new varieties of Indian English are emerging? And at some point I say, stop it. That won't work. Get it right. Okay, so I understand the problem, but I want you to understand the corresponding problem, which is the moment you begin to talk about codification, you have to confront the problem of homogenization. If indeed you're going to talk about textbooks and you have one linguistic variety which has 15 users, are you going to preserve linguistic variety of 15 users and produce textbook to 15 users and send exams to 15 users? Institutional compulsions drive a kind of homogenization, and I'm not recommending one or the other, but maybe asking that we recognize that there is a tension between our longing for heterogeneity and the institutional and external factors that make for homogeneity.
Thank you, Anup, for this very forceful presentation. We could have probably gone on with this, and I would summarize now, probably at the end, and it's difficult to summarize this session, but let me think about it a little more. After the morning session, we would come back to it, and maybe some of these issues would carry on with us for the rest of the day. Thank you, Alo. Thank you so much, particularly for drawing this analog and probably making things much more effective than just confining ourselves to the issue of time. Thank you.
Hello. Who is the author of the book, The One Language, Two Scripts, sir?
Christopher King.
Sorry for extending.
No. I have taken permission from Eric to be brutal about time, so that the issues are deliberated and not one issue dominates, but many more ideas coming. The idea of our seminar, and I'm saying the intention, is not to find solutions. The idea of the seminar, as of course the chairperson said, is primarily to discuss seminal ideas that people have worked, read, put forth. Purpose of a seminar, a rally is for political, but the purpose of a seminar is not political. It is purely to try and evolve more concepts, better theories. With this intention, it's not that a seminar is useful only for the participants. It is also useful for the resource persons, that their world, their field becomes a lot more complex than it was before they went to a particular seminar. Again, from this point of view, my request would be that the deliberations on stage are not looked as seminar, and what happens during the break, over the lunch, over the coffee, tea, not seminar. That is also seminar, and I would be very happy if all the participants walk up to the resource persons and try and build on the questions raised during the discussions.